Hello and welcome to Spotlight on Africa. I'm Zinat Hansrod. Indigenous peoples, lands and territories cover 80% of the areas that are environmentally crucial for the planet. These areas being an integral part of their life, indigenous peoples are therefore vital to maintaining these ecosystems. However, what we know is that indigenous peoples and local communities living in protected areas tend to be ignored in conservation policies and practices.
What we've seen in the past has been that the rainforests of Central Africa and other regions around the world actually have been treated as wildernesses which are free from human occupation.
Simon Council, Director of Rainforest Foundation UK in London.
And to be preserved in some kind of natural state primarily for their wildlife. What this ignores is that certainly in Central Africa, almost all of the landscape, probably all of it in fact, has been long occupied by humankind, by Bantu farmers and by indigenous hunting-gathering pygmies. So by excluding such communities from strict conservation areas, what has often happened is that there have been serious conflicts. People have been evicted from their homes. Their livelihoods, such as hunting and gathering wild foods, have been suppressed and interrupted. People have literally been starved. And this has created a sense of conflict between local communities and conservation. And we think ultimately we really need to enlist their support to protect wildlife rather than antagonizing them and preventing them from really engaging in conservation.
At the last Congress of IUCN, the International Union for Conservation of Nature, in Hawaii, one important decision was to create a new category of membership for Indigenous Peoples Organization, a move that will strengthen the role of Indigenous organizations on an international platform. Let's go to Namibia, home to the San, the Himba and the Nama Indigenous communities. Willem Udendal has worked extensively with them. He's an attorney at the Legal Assistance Center in Windhoek.
Namibia for many years has been a good example of how community-based natural resource management can work. They've benefits in terms of the wildlife utilization program, as well as, you know, getting some sort of income from tourism activities. But over the last few years, the overall community-based natural resource management program has been severely challenged by the increase in wildlife poaching, specifically as it's organized by mainly Chinese wildlife crime syndicates. It's becoming a serious problem all over Africa. Endangered species such as the black rhino, where they're poached for their horn, and then also, of course, the poaching of elephants. So it is problematic. You know, these syndicates are very well organized, and it's really undermining many years of good conservation work in Namibia. So we're working on trying to find solutions. We need help from communities. We need help from the police. We need better prosecution. The problem is our police services are not ready to deal with these syndicates. I mean, because they've really become very sophisticated.
According to an international treaty called the Convention on Biological Diversity, 17% of land should be conservation areas by 2020. Today, they cover less than 15% of the world's land. Vast amount of conservation funds are being spent on creating more protected areas. But according to Victoria Tauli Corpus, the United Nations Special Rapporteur on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, only a small amount goes to the communities living there. She says that there is a pressing need to do more to protect the areas, while ensuring that the money reaches local communities involved in protection efforts.
There should be effective monitoring systems in terms of how the money is spent, but also in terms of how the parks are being protected. You need modern technologies to be able to track down where the degradation or deforestation is taking place, for instance, in forests. But you also need community participation because the people in the communities are the ones who are most concerned in terms of protecting their own ecosystems. You also need some support to be able to reform the national laws, for instance, if the laws are not really recognizing the rights of indigenous people. These kinds of support are not easily accessible and available.
In the Democratic Republic of Congo, a local NGO, Natural Resources Network, works with the local Bantu communities and the indigenous pygmy population in the Western Equateur and Maindombe provinces. Its objective is to educate them on their legal rights and obligations, as well as to help them map the land they occupy using tablets. 3 years into the project, the advocacy manager, Blaise Mudodosi, is happy with the results.
Dans toute la zone du projet, on remarque déjà que les communautés, en connaissant déjà leurs droits,
we've noticed that the communities who are aware of their rights are better equipped to claim them through letters they send to companies operating in the areas, to the local authorities, and to the conservation body managing the protected areas. In Lukulela, for example, the local Bantu communities can now access the protected areas and carry out the traditional activities while making sure they respect the conservation laws. The eco guards didn't allow them access to the protected areas because they themselves didn't know what is legal and what is not. Now the Bantus in Tumba Ledima can hunt, plant and gather food.
This approach to conservation, involving the indigenous people in the decision-making process and in protecting wildlife, is what Simon Council advocates.
The existing protected areas need to be completely redesigned, basically, taking the presence and the occupation of local communities into account in the way that these areas are managed. For example, recognizing the customary land rights of those communities within the parks, allowing them to continue their livelihoods, engaging them in the management of those areas, and also, really importantly, building on the traditional practices that many of these communities have in actually conserving the wildlife themselves. Many of them, for example, have strong social taboos on hunting animals like bonobos or chimpanzees. And they can also be very helpful in informing us about the activities of much more dangerous commercial poachers, ivory hunters, bushmeat hunters, and so on. So if we can work more with communities rather than against them, we think this will be a much more sustainable and stronger way of preserving and protecting the Africa's wildlife in the future.
Gonzalo Oviedo is the head of social policy at the International Union for Conservation of Nature, IUCN. He says he can see a global trend emerging whereby indigenous peoples and local communities are in charge. He cites an example in the Indian Ocean.
In Madagascar, the communities, the coastal communities, have created a network of community-based marine protected areas because their livelihoods are based on the marine fisheries and coastal resources. But they realize the need for conservation, and they have established a network of about 70 areas where communities create their own relatively small, most of them protected area, and they have created today a network, you know, to work with each other. So this is a remarkable example of the bottom-up initiative that is based on their own cultures and identity and livelihoods in a place where the action by the government for conservation of the resources is practically non-existent.
Are we to be optimistic then and hope that conservation initiatives drawing on human nature harmony can be the norm? Victoria Tauli-Kaupuz has this to say.
To a certain extent, I'm optimistic because the people are becoming more aware. You know, the people who live in the forest are becoming more aware about what their rights are, and they are asserting and claiming this. But I'm also a little bit pessimistic because many states are still not adhering or complying with their obligations to international human rights law or international environmental law. So that's where my pessimism comes in.
In a world facing serious environmental challenges, a new conservation philosophy is far from being superfluous, but rather a much-needed alternative to help protect the planet's fragile biodiversity. That's all we have time for this week's edition of Spotlight on Africa. And it's goodbye from me, Zinat Hansrode.